All right, welcome to the Volterra podcast number 16. I'm Rowan Kane. I'm here with Louis Reeve. How are we doing today, Louis?
Doing very well on a pretty cold London night. Good to be with you.
Pretty fucking cold here as well. And Ben Schreckinger out of Boston. How are you doing, Ben?
Just chipper. It's unseasonably warm here.
Really? Yeah. I heard it was lovely this past weekend, wasn't it?
What was lovely?
The weather.
Well, are you talking about the storm on Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, that was crazy. Thankfully, it ended. Thankfully for me, it ended by Thanksgiving morning. But yeah, it was a disaster.
6 feet of snow in Buffalo. Well, that was why Volterra the 16 is a little late. We had Thanksgiving last week for our American listeners. I'm sure you celebrated. And Louis, you don't understand Thanksgiving?
No, I'm still not totally. I as far as I have been led to believe, and this is only through exposure to North Americans. No, it is strictly Americans, isn't it? Thanksgiving,
like there's not Canadian Thanksgiving as well.
Canadian, right. They have it too.
Okay. But it's different. It's a different day. It's in October.
Okay. I mean that sort of scrambles things a bit more, but it's the one where you guys is this the Mayflower one or Jamestown one?
Mayflower.
So Massachusetts Bay Colony, this one.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. No, actually, Massachusetts Bay came later. There were two colonies. There was Plymouth Colony, and then Massachusetts Bay Colony, and then they merged to make Massachusetts.
Okay. Yeah, I've never totally quite understood Thanksgiving. I mean, you can give me a rundown. As far as I know, it's just turkeys and there's Indians involved somewhere.
What's that?
Am I barking up the wrong tree?
That's the general. If you were to give like two or three words, it would be turkeys and lots of food and football. But basically, the kind of story within the story is that the colonists or the pilgrims arrived here. They didn't call themselves pilgrims. I forget what they called themselves, but they arrived here in Massachusetts in like November, like after the planting season when there was no hope of finding, and they didn't bring any food with them. And the only reason they survived was because, in the 50 years before, like 90% of the Indian population had been killed by various epidemics brought to the New World since Columbus. So this is 130 years after Columbus. And in that time, the Indian population had been decimated like beyond recognition. So they basically found massive amounts of stored food and supplies from these deserted Indian villages. And they to a 17th century, early 17th century mind, it was God giving them food to help them survive. So the next fall, after they had gone through an entire planting season and harvest season and all that, they celebrated with a Thanksgiving feast. So that is the origin. So it is at once celebrating the ability of white men to survive on the North American continent while also celebrating kind of backhandedly the fact that 90% of the Indian population died in the 100 years beforehand.
That's not really what's being celebrated, though.
No, it's not being celebrated. It's being I don't know what the right word is.
Propagated,
yeah. But that's a story not many people will tell. And I only say that because I just read a book about it, so there you go.
Is this 1491 or something?
Yeah, 1491.
I want to read that.
It's really good.
1493, it was good.
You read 1493?
Yeah.
Okay. So you skip the original. So does that kind of give you a basic rundown?
Yeah, it was just always quite strange. I never quite understood exactly why you guys did it. I always thought it was I knew it was something to do with pilgrims, and there was always thought the Indians kind of helped you out or something like that. That was the issue. That was what seemed to have been explained to me by maybe some of the less well-read Americans in the Northeast Fife sphere all those years ago. But no, that is quite interesting. You guys make almost a bigger deal about it than Christmas, which is quite quite amazing, actually.
Yeah, I would say I was asked this because I had a big Thanksgiving here in the Netherlands with 3/4 of the people not having ever had Thanksgiving before. It's not bigger than Christmas because Christmas is a whole thing, but I would say it's more important to Americans than Christmas because not everybody celebrates Thanksgiving, not everybody celebrates Christmas. Now, Ben, you may disagree with that.
No, it's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
But Thanksgiving's bigger for us just because we get together with our extended family up in Maine, and Christmas is just smaller because it's mostly just us at home, my nuclear family. So.
Yeah. And what did you do for it, Ben?
I went up to Maine, where we always go. My mom's sister lives there, and you know, there's like. Always like 30 plus of us. It's a lot of fun. It was great.
Nice. What was the, are there any special dishes that you guys do? That's the thing though. Every family has a certain like menu that they put out every year.
Oh yeah.
My personal favorite from our annual spread is the, Toll House cookie pie that my aunt makes. It's basically a chocolate chip cookie pie. It's amazing.
Nice. Like a blondie kind of pie.
Exactly.
Nice.
Is it a drinky holiday? Like, do you guys get reamed doing it or not so much?
The men kind of drink while watching football, I guess, would be the best way to put it. Right, Ben?
Yeah, that's common. It's like a drinking with your family holiday. It's not like a drinking out of the bar holiday.
Got you.
Yeah. But like when the Wednesday night before is when everybody's back home. So that's supposedly one of the biggest like hometown bar nights of the year, where you go home and you see all your high school friends that you hate. And
Yeah. That's like Christmas for me. I get it totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So moving on, Louis has some other news. He went to the Scottish National Party meeting at the Houses of Parliament. This past week. When was it, Louis?
I don't know. Days kind of like blur into a lot of other days for me because that I miss some because I've been drinking. So it was sometime last week, certainly, maybe Wednesday, possibly Thursday, Tuesday. If you've been drinking, I kind of write that one off. Just live the 6-day week or the 5-day week or sometimes the 3-day week. Either way.
Were you drunk at the meeting?
Nah. And there wasn't actually, they kind of stinged out. I thought there was going to be like maybe some refreshments and that kind of thing as well. But there was nothing. It was actually, and it was quite oversubscribed actually, which is what I'll come on to. There's been quite a strange twist in UK politics since the Scottish independence referendum, which as you know, was a no vote. The Nationalist Party of Scotland has, I think, tripled in its members since then now. And they can't cope with, they've never had this level of support before. And their website sort of crashed like last week because they're just being so oversubscribed. And there's a new newspaper in Scotland, like using the word propagating twice in the podcast. That's, there we go. Very intellectual. But, coming up, we've got a general election here in, next May, I think, May, March, one of the M months, but soon. And there's a real chance that the Scottish National Party, because of the way the British government has reacted after the independence referendum and the failings of what they thought was the solution, which has been this sort of bit of devolution called the... I forget the name of the
Devo Plus, wasn't it? Devo Plus?
Devo Max. It was
Devo Max. There you go.
Devo Max. And so now, coming up to this election, there's a chance that the Scottish National Party might actually be the third party in Britain. and get more votes and thus more seats in Westminster, so in the British establishment, than they have ever before. I mean, at the moment they've got, I think, around 10 seats, which isn't really enough to kind of make any sort of big difference. But they find themselves in a totally unique position that if, for example, the result is very close and the Scottish National Party, if they had a chunk of the vote, could potentially go into power with one of the major, with one of the big parties, the big two, the kind of Labour or Conservative, just as the Liberal Democrats did with such aplomb in the last general election.
Right. So the, and this is the kind of crux of it. Would they ever align themselves with the Conservative Party, or would it be Labour or kind of a Conservative minority leadership?
They definitely would not align with the Conservative Party. They, I think they've actually publicly stated that under no circumstance will they ever like condone anything the Conservative Party has ever done or will do. There's a lot. It's a really, like, the Conservative Party are very, very, very unpopular in Scotland just for a number of reasons. But
so is the rise of the SNP since the referendum coming at the expense of Labour support? Is that who they're peeling people away from?
That's what Scotland votes. It's an industrial nation. It votes Labour. But that's where the numbers are, basically. The numbers vote. The numbers who are voting Labour are being swayed to vote SNP, basically.
So
the Labour Party is it's become a bit of a misnomer, I suppose. They are all too similar to the Conservative Party now, and they don't represent the kind of the working man, I suppose, is what they were supposed to do.
And where does the Lib Dems fall on that spectrum, on the Liberal-Conservative spectrum?
Well, the Lib Dems are technically in power at the moment in the joint they are Nick Clegg.
The government.
They are. It's a power sharing technically,
right.
But they've really lost. They've lost an incredible amount of credibility for joining with the Tories and the Conservatives in the last election. The Liberal Democrats actually used to be probably one of the, well, they were quite an exciting party before they sort of took power. They've lost a lot of, basically a lot of the things that they promised they would do were contrary to what the Conservatives wanted to do and now haven't been done. So I think they are, in terms of opinion polls, they are now behind the SNP. They may be behind, they've been losing to, they have lost in places to UKIP, who have got some seats now. So the United Kingdom Independence Party. So I think the Liberal Democrats are pretty dead and buried, actually, in terms of garnering any sort of support in the next election. And I don't know how they're ever going to really get back to the level they were at.
But they were so the SNP is the only party in Scotland representing the working man. If you're in England, do you have any options for that if Labour is no longer truly Labour?
There's plenty, but nothing particularly big. There's socialist parties and there's a lot of minor parties, but there is not another entity to Labour as such, like another left wing, which is ironic because Labour is not a left wing party at all. It's, to all intents and purposes, like just a mildly right wing, very middle class party now. And this is actually why people are voting UKIP. On the face of it, they are like a very far right, very extreme party, but they do seem to speak to the one of their big kind of, it's not a con, it's their I guess just campaign strategies is appealing to the working man, and it's working in a lot of places, and they are getting a lot of support from being just listened to, even if they're being listened to by maladjusted nutcases who are UKIP. But it's an interesting time for British politics. Like, it could be very, very interesting election.
When is the general election?
As I say, I think it's March, May 2015. So that.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around this a little bit more. The SNP, they're strictly Scotland. They have no They have no, like, foothold outside Scotland.
No. We are – sorry, that's a bit football, sort of teaming myself there. They have no – no, they have no appeal outside of Scotland. They are a party that, you know, represents Scotland, it, period. They've been saying that potentially they could try to – stand some people in some of the border seats, maybe Berwick, possibly kind of Carlisle at a push, but it's a complete waste of time. Like that, so many of their policies are geared
one. And would, do you think that the this has been tried a couple times in the U.S. with like the Working Families Party trying to move the Democratic Party back to the left? Yeah. Because the Democratic Party has, like Labour, become a kind of centrist or centre-right party in a lot of ways. And there's been this response on the left of trying to – creating smaller parties to that talk more to the progressive base and try and bring the conversation back – trying to bring the party's conversation back to the left. Do you think the SNP will do that to Labour, or is this – has Labour kind of found a – found a home in centrist middle class England?
Yeah, it's probably an easy thing to do if you're the Labour Party to kind of to go after that, because it's, you know, there's a lot of votes there basically. Right. I don't know. I honestly have no idea how it would work out. The SNP party is far from being like a particularly left wing party. It's I'd say like it, you know, it does veer slightly to the left, but it's not in any way sort of advocating, you know, vast sort of social change. So I've no idea how it's going to work out. Maybe nothing will come of it, but potentially a Scottish party would have a slice of kind of the action over the entirety of Britain, which would be, I think, a pretty new thing here.
Yeah. Ben, do you have anything else you want to ask?
No, I'll be interested to see how the elections play out next year, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we'll definitely be keeping an eye on that. Next up, Ferguson has kind of been reignited in the news, at least in the U.S. Louis said there wasn't much about it in the U.K.
I mean, no, certainly when it kicked off, it was pretty heavily covered, but sort of since then, it's sort of falling off the front pages here. Obviously, it being in America doesn't help. But it's still sort of being covered by a lot of online news sources, but the main kind of BBC's, ITV's, it's falling towards the end of those.
And Ben, what do you think about the coverage in the US? Because I haven't really been tuned into it too closely. What's the journalistic? Has it been? Was it as bad as last time, or is it kind of? Has it improved at all?
The coverage I saw, I didn't really have a problem with. Yeah. I mean, they got it at least from what I saw. Multiple sources got at the sort of. The remarkable thing that happened here was that the grand jury didn't hand down an indictment, and that almost never happens because a grand jury is basically just a rubber stamp. And the prosecutor, this guy McCullough, it's basically what he did was very disingenuous, because if you're a prosecutor and you want to charge someone with a crime, you do it, and then they get charged with a crime. If you don't want to charge someone with a crime, you don't charge them with a crime. What this guy did was brought this before a grand jury, sort of on the pretense that he wanted to charge Darren Wilson with a crime for killing this kid. But then he presented all this exculpatory evidence. He, at the grand jury proceeding, he presented all of this evidence that was in Darren Wilson's favor, which is just not what a grand jury is for. And so that's the only reason that the grand jury didn't hand down an indictment. Is that McCullough put Darren Wilson on the stand for 4 hours and she presented all this evidence on Wilson's behalf. And that's why there was no indictment. But that's not what you're not supposed to call a defendant to testify at a grand jury proceeding. You're not supposed to present evidence in favor of the defendant. That's just not the purpose of a grand jury. So basically what this guy did was he knew that he'd catch a lot of heat if he didn't bring charges at all. So he brought charges and then very intentionally sabotaged his own charges. So that he could say, "Hey, I tried." So that's, and people were very outraged about that. There's still a Justice Department investigation into the whole thing. And I think he could even be tried again at the state level. Wilson could, because there's not like a double jeopardy protection here.
Right.
That's really, I don't know. It's really, and if you look at a couple places have put out charts of all of the witness testimony and what they agree and disagree on. And it's all over the place, which just gets at the, even with tons and tons of witnesses, there's still important areas of doubt because eyewitness testimony is so tough and there's just so much inconsistency, both from people who would have an agenda and people who seem to have no agenda.
Right. And on the ground in, well, it's now become a national protest movement. If you can, national protest topic. You can't really call it a movement yet, but that's my question is, do you see a larger kind of movement coming from these protests, or do you think this is kind of Occupy Wall Street all over again, where there are national national protests and there's maybe an attempt at a consolidation of some sort, but nothing really comes of it?
So the thing about Occupy Wall Street is that it really touched a nerve with a lot of people and got a lot of people in the streets for a period of time, but it had no agenda.
Right.
It was about inequality, but there was no real agenda. And the grievance was just very broad and very vague.
Right.
I think what you're already starting to see coming out of the Darren Wilson case, the Michael Brown case, and it builds upon Trayvon Martin as well. You know, this isn't by no means happening in isolation. But now this really moves. This puts a focus on police misconduct specifically, excessive use of police force. You had the guy that was killed by police in Staten Island while he was selling fake cigarettes this right. year. And now what you're seeing is just a lot more attention being paid. And it's helped immensely both by surveillance cameras and by the fact that people have cell phones and can take footage of further instances of, either improperly stopping minorities or improperly killing minorities. There was a video that came out last week of a 12-year-old kid playing with a toy gun in Cleveland, a black kid. Cops pull up, and within – it was less than 5 seconds of pulling their car off, they had shot this kid dead. He was just playing with a toy gun in a park.
2 seconds. If you see the video, there's no lag between when they pull up, open the door, jump out, and shoot the kid in the stomach. Like, it's – pretty graphic, but sorry, go ahead.
And there's this video that just surfaced in Denver of a stop this week. This wasn't a minority, I think. It might have been a Hispanic guy. But either way, there was some drug arrest in Denver, and the cops have this guy in cuffs, and there's three of them surrounding him. They're slamming his face into the pavement. And there's a guy videotaping it on his tablet. Cops come over, seize his tablet illegally, delete the video. That would have been the end of the story. And you know this happens, you know, maybe on a daily basis. This is happening constantly in America.
Right.
Instances of brutality being recorded, cops taking the evidence and destroying it. This guy gets his tablet back, though, and it syncs back from the cloud. So it hadn't really been deleted. And he gets the video back. Now the FBI is investigating.
Right.
But I think that this is – it's sparked enough emotion and enough interest – and it's a narrow enough sort of field, you know, police brutality, that I think that it's going to breathe life into a reform movement. And I think you're likely to see results at some point, because it's the public. It's more or less the majority of the public against police departments. It's not like gun control, where you have a huge part of the public firmly standing against reform. You have one special interest standing against reform, and it's not a big business interest. It doesn't have a ton of money. So I think that you're going to see reform.
Yeah. Yeah. And would this, so this, this, I mean, this topic is rife within, has been rife within, the urban community, the black community, the hip hop community for 3 decades. I mean, this, some of the first hip hop songs ever written were about police brutality and police,
why now?
Yeah. White police officers targeting black.
I think crime, first of all, crime was a bigger issue in the 90s.
Yeah.
And so the public was on the side of, you know, Bill Clinton saying he's going to put more cops on the street, tougher prison sentences. If you think about what New York City was like 20 years ago, it was dangerous. Crime has plummeted. Violent crime has plummeted is one thing. So there's not, if people feel threatened, they're going to say, let's get these cops, you know, busting some skulls out there. Definitely. We need law and order.
Right.
We have law and order. You know, there are some, you know, Louisiana, Detroit, Chicago, still really terrible crime epidemics. Much of the rest of the country, it's just not as much of an issue.
Right. So
there's that. There's also just like there's social media and like the ability to record police officers. I think that those two things, and also sort of just like a greater on issues of race, the United States has been slowly and steadily getting more liberal for 150 years, you know, and this is just we're more liberal than we were 20 years ago.
Yeah, to an extent, I would agree with you. I would push back on the idea that we are more liberal than we were 20 years ago, though. I'm not sure that much has changed over the past 20 years that would, yes, our generation may be more culturally diverse or more ethnically diverse than anything else. So we have that going for us. But on the other hand, you have this massive pushback led by the conservative right, the far conservative right, that has a lot of clout within a lot of American households. And I think the police brutality is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a significant minority. It's a minority, but it's a significant minority that sees no problem with over policing of poor black and Hispanic neighborhoods. It sees no problem with police using force when they feel threatened.
Sure, I just think that's a shrinking part of the population. 20 years ago, Jesse Helms was a senator, and Barack Obama couldn't have been elected president. So
right.
I understand that the progress has not been fast or total, but I think that if you were to really evaluate the racial attitudes today versus 20 years ago, you'd see a liberalization.
So 20 years ago was when was what? I mean, 20 years ago was what's his face? The black guy got beat up in LA in the same
guy.
Seems like every 20 years there's race riots in across the country, and the topics are just different issues. And I would put these in the category of race riots because they are racially motivated.
Were there riots anywhere besides Ferguson?
What's that?
Was there rioting anywhere besides Ferguson?
No, that's. I think there was rioting in a couple other places. Yeah. And if not rioting, then protests. Protests are different than rioting.
Protests are very different, though.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. So I mean, I guess I have less confidence in the fact that. Are that the U.S. racial attitudes are progressing, because I just think the mouthpiece of the right and of the Republican Party is that much more I don't know, loud and powerful. Louis, what is your kind of, I mean, this similar a kind of similar thing happened a couple of years ago in the UK, in London, where a black guy was shot, right?
Yeah. I mean, like the shooting bit doesn't happen a lot here, obviously, because we don't have like people in Britain shoot fucking pheasants and stuff like that rather than people. But they, there's been like actually quite a few of these since the, since obviously we also don't have the same immigration history as you guys have at all. But since immigration kind of really kicked off in like the late 60s, early 70s, there has been some pretty big issues. It's usually we don't obviously have a Hispanic community, but there is, I think, always the black community in Britain that is affected, which is basically the black community in London, because the rest of the UK is pretty ethnically sort of singular. There's not a lot of diversity.
There are Indians and Pakistanis all over England, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's still like a very small percentage comparatively. And there are a couple of cities in the north, and London especially. Like London is now over 50% non-white.
Non-white, yeah.
So not non-white British, but non-white. So the scale is tipped, but London's nothing to like really atypical of the rest of the UK. But there has been a lot of the police mishandling of suspects, especially in like black neighborhoods. And it did happen, yeah, a couple of summers ago. There was the London riots, which kind of got the what the police did, which was shoot an unarmed man in the street, got glossed over a bit because a lot of people took the rioting and seized the chance to like steal mobile phones and trainers, or sneakers for the transatlantic audience there.
That's what always happens in riots, but there, I mean, there has to be some sort of unrest below the rioting. Like that is the articulation of some sort of anger, but yeah.
But it's been going on since since the Brixton riots of the 1981, you know, they happen kind of every, they're not as much any longer, but they were quite a fixture for certainly the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah. Okay. So where does the debate, I mean, Ben, you mentioned that you think there's going to be some sort of reform to policing or reform to attitudes. Like what do you see coming of this?
I think one of the more specific changes you're going to see is that in a lot more jurisdictions, police are going to be required to wear cameras on their bodies. I think that's going to gain a lot of traction. I think that, it happens pretty constantly. Every year, there are multiple instances of police shooting and killing unarmed, innocent black people. Case of Michael Brown, he just committed a crime. There are even more clear-cut cases. Yeah, it happened in New York within the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Some rookie cop just shot and killed some guy in the projects who was walking in a stairwell, was doing absolutely nothing. And I think that both the legal and the sort of extra legal protections given to police officers who do this sort of thing, I think that they're going to get pushed back. It's tough because there's this sort of incestuous relationship between prosecutors and police departments and police unions. But I think that you're going to see, it's not going to happen everywhere and it's not going to happen all at once, but I think that's going to, the back of the police unions are going to get broken in some places, and there's going to be reform.
But do you think that's actually going to be an effective measure to curtail?
Putting cameras on police officers is very, very effective.
Yeah.
Invariably, when you institute that, complaints of police brutality plummet.
Yeah.
So that's one just sort of common sense measure that, even that by itself, at least wherever it gets implemented, that's significant progress.
Yeah. All right. Well, do we have anything else that we want to chat about today?
No, I think the topical issues of the week have been, or the week and a half have been pretty covered there.
Yeah. Ben, you got anything?
That's me. That's all I got.
All right. Well, that's a interesting note to leave it on. We will be back, I think, later this week, possibly, or early next week, with some new topics. And I hope you join us then. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at RLM Kane. Volterra is at the Volterra. Ben is at Shrek Reports, SCHREECK Reports. And Louis is, you can follow him on some dirty train somewhere to South London. I don't know.
I'm on the Central Line a lot.
There you go. The Central
Line. That guy. They always get a seat next to me, though.
Yeah. Follow him at Deep Fried Fiddle. And we will talk to you next week. Have a good one, guys.
See you later.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. Stand clear, done, man. I talk. You can't stand where I stand. You can't walk where I walk. Watch out, we run New York. Policeman come, we bust him out the park. I know this for a fact. You don't like how I act. You claim I'm selling crack. Will you be doing that? I'd rather say see ya, 'cause I would never be ya. Be a officer, your wicked overseer. Your hot shot, you wanna get pucks and be a savior. First show a little respect, change your behavior. Change your attitude, change your plan. There could never really be justice or stolen land. Are you really for peace and equality? Or when my car's hooked up, you know you wanna follow me. Your laws are minimal.